So let's start. Tonight is the January 17th. We had a week off, and that's why we have to put things together. This is the 10th in the series of the 1300s. We want to make a dedication to a my wife's great-grandfather, and Mrs. Lichtman's grandfather, Avram Yaakov ben Meir. And the neshama should have an aliyah.
Amen.
Okay. Okay, first of all, I apologize tonight. I guess whenever there's a weekend, I came in here about 45 minutes ago, and nothing's here. The screen, the projector, nothing was here. So where is it? I still have no idea, but I had to make a decision. Do I just look around the entire building? Instead, I ran to Torah Semes. It's on tape now, so I'm. And I borrowed the projector and then I needed a stand, so we got that. And wouldn't you know? My clicker, so the piece that goes in the computer, I must have left it in a different computer in a room. So I don't have a clicker tonight, but at least we got the projector, we got the computer going. We're talking about, so far, the past 2-3 weeks, we're talking about the 1300s themselves. We're talking about what a tragic time it was for all of Europe in general, and especially for the Jews in particular. Whatever was happening to the non-Jews was happening to the Jews, whether it was war, famine, plague, I mean, everything, you just imagine. And then, not only did the Jews have to deal with what everybody had to deal with, but they were dealing with the pogroms as well, because the superstitious Christians were blaming the Jews for everything. We mentioned a few times that the Christians blamed the Jews for the plague. How did they think the plague spread? They didn't know. Today we think it's the bubonic plague that originally originated from rats, fleas from rats that were infested with this disease, and when it bit a person, it went into the disease went into the person, and then airborne it could be transmitted to other people. So that's how we generally think it occurred back then, but they didn't know. So they thought it was the Jewish conspiracy, and the Jews were poisoning the wells, and the Jews were, you know, crazy theories. They brought the poison in these little black boxes, and they would say these incantations under their breath. I mean, tefillin and brachos, you know, you could believe any, it's just crazy. So not only in mainland Europe was things very bad. I mean, we're talking about France and Germany and Italy, England. By this time in England, there were no Jews in England. And there were not that many Jews in France, especially northern France. Maybe in Provence, there may have still been Jews. So it was mainly Germany, Italy, and I guess towards Eastern Europe. That I'm talking about the plague in particular. With one exception, Poland. Somehow, overall, Poland was spared from the plague. There were a few pockets all over Europe that was spared from the plague. So what I wanted to do is, we pretty much done through the plague and through the 1300s, which the Jews were not only blamed and killed, but they were expelled from the cities and countries that they were in. But now I wanted to go back to Spain. Spain we covered 2 years ago. Last year we did mainly European history, Jewry, up until the 1300s. And the year before we did Spain. Spain, you would one of the brachas that brachas, but one of the ma'ase avosim labanim is that when Yaakov faced Esav, so he faced Esav, he prepared for three things. When Yaakov faced, he davened, he sent gifts, and he split his camp into two. And the idea being, if Esav attacks one camp, the other camp will survive. So in history, this is what really Hashem has done to the Jewish people. And we can trace this all the way back since the Chorban, Bayis Rishon. And the Chorban, Bayis Rishon, all the Jews were exiled, most of the Jews, 90% of the Jews, pretty much all the Jews were exiled to Babylon, Babel. And then it was taken over by Persia, and that's what made the Purim story, the upcoming Yom Tov of Purim, so dangerous for the Jews, because the Jews were all in one area. And with Haman's decree, all the Jews could have been killed. Since then, when the Jews were able to return to Eretz Yisrael, so the Jews were never again, the bulk of the Jews were never again under one country. And there has always been, whenever one country has been persecuted, the other country, the Jews in other countries had like sort of a respite. It was easy to get, it wasn't bad. Just take like the Persian and the Roman Empire. When the Romans were persecuting the Jews in Babel had it relatively easy. It was very good, basically. I mean, for overall. I mean, there were sporadic different things, but it was much better than under the Romans. And then when things were going in Europe, you always had Spain. Spain, the Jews in Spain also had like a, it was sort of like a different destiny. You have Jews in the Muslim world as opposed to the Jews in the Christian world. And always, things were always under different, the Jews were in different areas. Just even you, probably recently today, you had the Jews, whether it was in Europe and the Jews in America. Those also, the Jews in Europe were killed, Jews in America had a respite. Today, you have America and Israel. You know, you always, so Hashem always made it that the Jews are always split into two places, or more than one place. Now, in the world today, the Jews, probably the most strongest, most established Jewish community that was in the 12, 1300s was Spain. You had Jews in Spain, Jews in Europe, and you had, you know, of course now the world is expanding, the civilized world is expanding, so you have Jews all over, but one of the main communities where the Jews were, one of the leading communities in terms of everything, in terms of numbers, in terms of scholarship, in terms of influence in the world, was Spain. So if the 1300s, if it would be very hard for the Jews in the rest of Europe, let's say, well, Germany and that area, so then you would hope that the Jews in Spain would have it easy. But that was not the case. Because as we'll see, that the Jews in Spain are going to have 1300s, where it would be very, very difficult for the Jews in Spain as well. So I'd like to do is maybe just go through a quick, just to get us to the 1300s in Spain. In 206, the Romans invaded Spain. A language became Latin, dominant language. Okay, let's move really quickly. Just going to backtrack a bit. But in 711, that was a big, big year because that's when the Muslim invasion, the Muslims came and totally invaded Spain. So now I just skipped to 711, the year, in the year 700s. And the Spain is mainly from the.
Were there any Jews in?
Very interesting question. North Africa there were, but the Jews came with the Muslims in the 700s. Okay, I'll keep going to the next one. There were Jews under the Visigoths, and this is also in the 400s, 500s. There were Jews there. It wasn't like a scholarly community, but there were Jews there, and. At first, the Visigoths, who were the German tribes, or whatever, the tribes that took over Spain, so at first they were nice to the Jews, but then eventually when they became Christian, they became very hard on the Jews. And they forced the Jews to convert. So back then, the Jews converted, but it was, the Jews the Visigoths at that point didn't have it all down, so packed to... as long as the Jews were outwardly looking Christian, so the Jews, would just make like they're Christians, but Some of them actually did convert, but most of them were like Muranos, and they look, this will blow over. You know, when the Christians decide to, you know, when the fanaticism, you know, the steam runs out, we'll just come back to being Jews, and that's pretty much what they did, which could explain one of the reasons why when they were given the choice in 1492 to convert or not, or we'll see tonight, hopefully we'll get to it in 1391, 100 years earlier, to convert or die, or so it could be that even though it was like 600-700 years earlier, but they had sort of in their, you know, in their history that they learned in that area, yeah, Jews then converted, they made like they were Christians, and they were able to come back to Judaism, you know, when the Christians got tired of it. And that's not going to be, a lot of things are going to change. Okay, so could you just go back one? What is the? Are you going forward or back? I think you're going forward. Do you know how to go back? Okay, so go one. Okay, so the Jewish response was when the Visigoths took over and they were giving him a hard time, so some fled to France. North Africa. I wonder if my pointer would work. Hold on 1 second. Is my pointer?
This will work.
Oh, okay. I got a little bit of something. Okay, so they the Jews, some of them went to France, some of them converted, some of them practiced the Muranos in secret. Okay, so now 711 comes, the Muslims take over from the Visigoths, and they and of course the Jews welcome them, because the Visigoths, which then became Christian, which were Christian at the time, were very harsh on the Jews, and all of a sudden came the Muslims. And then what happened is, so the Muslims came in, and they were, you know, the Jews were very happy, and they were able to go back to becoming Jews. With the Muslims also came many Jews, because the Jews were mostly with the Muslim world at the time. You could just go to the next one. Muslims were very tolerant. The whole world has taken a 180, because in those days the Muslims were the ones that were very tolerant and like liberal, so to speak, and you know, you could have your religion as long as you just submit to us. If you can just play the game that we're the better religion, we'll allow you to do a lot of things. So the Jews were good at that. The Jews were used to it. This is Gullus. We could deal with it. Christians had a harder time with it, because if you think that you're a number one, we can't be secondary. If we're the right, you know, you're infidels and you're doing the wrong thing, then, you know, how could we Christians, you know, be second fiddle to you as Muslims and vice versa? If the Christians were able to, just play second fiddle and realize, show whatever respect that the Muslims wanted, whether you can't ride a horse or your houses of worship can't be higher than than mosques, or whatever it is that they expected you to be. I think the name is called a dhimmi, or I don't know however you say it. But if you were able to be like a dhimmi, then that would be fine. I think probably just to move up to today, you know, as long as the Jews were dhimmis, you know, were able to play second fiddle, the Jews got along very well with the Muslims. It wasn't until recent history when Jews from Christian, you know, Christian Jews, the Zionists, came to Israel. Those Jews were not going to play second fiddle to the Arabs. And that's when you ran into problems. You know, and then the Muslims already are, you're not be second fiddle, and you know you're against religion, and that caused a lot of the issues between the Jews and the Arabs. Probably today, if the genie's out of the bottle, I think it's, if the Jews today would say to the Arabs, okay, we'll become dhimmis and let's be friends, it wouldn't work. That's it there. I think there's too much has passed since then, so I don't think we can ever go back to that situation, at least in Israel or the areas around Israel. But again, this is all my own just observation. Okay, so now the Muslims very much needed Jews. They came in very handy. First of all, Muslims were not as popular, so they couldn't control the nations, the area that they conquered very efficiently. Many of them were illiterate, and they just weren't good at organizing. When we did Muslims a few years back, Muslims never, they didn't like the day-to-day, the local governing. You know, they're just on top and everything, and, you know, what do they call it, bakshish, you just send us the money, and, originally they wanted everybody to be Islam, to be Muslim, and then they'd kill you by the sword, but eventually they became very realist and very practical, and they of course encouraged them. They were very successful. Many people did become Muslims, but as long as, again, you paid your taxes, they stayed out of the local politics. And that's where Jews came along. They were skilled, they administrators. They know that there's no way the Jews are going to rebel and try to take the country over from them, so they could trust the Jews. And if they were smart and they knew how to play second fiddle, it was a perfect shidduch for the Muslims coming in there. And then what happened is this came. Now, this is what really started the golden age of Spain. Was a leader, Abdal Rahman III. Whoops, go back one. Okay, so again, in 912, 961, however it is, he came to Spain. He was, an amazing person. He wanted to have Spain, Cordova, which is his capital, rival that of any other Muslim place in the world. And to that, he brought in the greatest minds, and he opened it up. He opened everything up. He opened his country up to education. Everything, sciences, math, everything was open. And people came. He brought in great minds and philosophers and mathematicians and scientists and doctors, everything. And he actually was the one that made Spain a great center of learning. Rivaled at that point, he became the leader of the world in terms of cutting edge of technology, cutting edge of philosophy, everything. All right, let's go on to the next one. He had a prime minister, and this is his caliphate. He ended up in Cordova, which is really south of Spain. Okay, he had his a vizier or a physician, courtier, diplomat by the name of Khizdai. You can go back, I guess. Khizdai ibn Shaprut. So that he was his advisor, and Khizdai ibn Shaprut was a Talmud Chacham, a really great, great Jew, a great person. And he had a tremendous amount of influence, and he became very rich. You can go to the next one, I guess. And he sponsored many, many Jews to come. I think if I'm not mistaken, I don't remember exactly, Chizdai, he invited the Rif, Rav Yitzchak Alfasi, to come. And Rav Yitzchak Alfasi, the joke was, is when he came, for the Prabha, he was 80 years old. So they said, 80 years old, you're going to come, what are we bringing you in, you're 80 years old? He says, don't worry, I'll be bar mitzvah in your country. And sure enough, he died at 93. But he brought him in. Once the Rif came, this is it. Now you're talking, this is very early. We've shown him high level. This is major league Talmidei Chachamim. This is like, just to show you where the Rif is, the Beis Yosef, when he decided his halachas, when he wrote the Shulchan Aruch, he based it on three poskim. One was the Rif, the Rambam, and the Rush. All right, and that's how if there was ever a machlokus between the Rif, the Rambam, and the Rush, so he was the one. He was the one. He paskened whichever to the majority, and that's why for us, it was like a little bit, since two of them were Sephardim and one of them was Ashkenazim, so it didn't, the Ashkenazim were not, they didn't go over well in Europe until the Ramah, which we hope to get to soon, was this whole thing about the Shulchan Aruch, we'll get to soon. but just to show that one of his three people that he did was from the Rif, who was brought in by, if I'm not mistaken, Chazdai ibn Shaprut. This definitely starts the golden age of Spain, and there is a lot of learning, and there's a lot of sponsorship, and there's a lot of the Muslims that they're accepting in terms of education and intellect. The Jews of Spain get into philosophy and poetry and all of the sciences. It's not limited just to Torah. That's going to be a big, big difference between Spanish Jewry and European Jewry. European Jewry was only Torah. That's the only thing that they dealt. If they had to deal with a philosophical question, it was only through the prism of Torah. Math was only through Torah. Sciences, everything was only through Torah. In Spain, they had a different way of looking at it, and that's from the beginning of the way it was. Okay, you just go on. I just put him in because from one of the greatest of people that came out of Spain at that time was the Rambam. Okay, so then what happened is slowly but surely the Christians started to make their way back to it's, I guess they called it the reconquest of Spain. And the Jews during this time are going to play a very, very important role, because again, you can't send a Christian to the Muslim south because they'd kill him. Maybe. Oh, no, I forget. The Muslims are very accepting until in the late 1100s, a different type of Muslims came, a more fanatical Muslim, and they were not as tolerant. And this was in the Almohads, I think. They came from North Africa, and they came in the late 1100s, almost by the 1200s. And when they came in, that said everybody's Muslim will leave, and many, many people left. Jews left, and Christians left. There was much less toleration in the south. Now the Christians realized they were using these Jews to their advantage as well. But as you can see over here, in 1914, the Christians were. By 1080, they were down to here. By 1130, by 1210, they were here. We're going to talk about a battle in 1210 that changed everything around. So you can go on to the next. Okay, so again, the Jews really, everybody needed Jews. They had court Jews. If you had to, the Christians wanted to deal now with the Muslims, and the Muslims wanted to deal with the Christians. They're in a state of war. Who do you send? You send Jews. They were the couriers. Muslims in between, this is earlier, Muslims in between the rulers among themselves, they would send Jews to deal. Even the Christians in between, whether it's Aragon or Castile or Navarone, they also... Jews were very handy in making treaties and deals and speaking to the other people. Okay, again, Jews were not seen as a threat, and they attained very high positions. Okay, I guess like always, the more successful the Jews became, the more jealousy and the more issues that they had from the non-Jews. Okay. Go on to the next one. Okay, again, resentment. Jews as being tax collectors. They were the face of the tax collecting. Okay, again, but the kings, at the same time as the masses were jealous of them, the kings really needed them and used them to great advantage. They would put them in high positions, even though from Italy, from the Pope and the from the Vatican, where they were coming out saying that the church doctrine, Augustine's is from old, Jews cannot be put in high prominent positions. But they ignored that in Spain. This was not really part of where what the Jews were. And that's where, the Jews reached tremendous prominence and tremendous riches and tremendous intellect. And they weren't like persecuted at all. Nothing like it was like what was going on in Europe. Okay, go on. Okay, again, this is the same thing, but a different day. They were needed to help in Reconstruction after there was a war, a battle. They had knowledge of culture and language, diplomats, negotiators, and they needed them to help with territories. Okay, that's what the role of the Jew would be for the next, for these 200-300 years during the reconquest. Go on. The nobility, yeah, so the kings, they very much relied on their Jews. Alfonso the VI, conqueror of Toledo, offered the Jews various privileges, including full equality with the Christians. Okay, that's where they were. This is 1085, so that's... this is what it looked like in 1100. Castile was the biggest. Aragon, which is going to become bigger, is over here. These are the Valencia. These are the little different Christian places. And these are the Almoravides. This is what the Muslims had, and slowly but surely the Christians are going to move their way down. Go on. Okay. Okay, when the Almohads came, I mentioned this before, the Jews moved north to Christian. They moved to North Africa. Okay, some people some people moved to Provence, they left Spain altogether. This is also the time when the Rambam, also he left Spain, because they were being attacked by the Muslims, and they didn't want to just stay in Spain. So that's the Rambam's family. Him and his brother and the family, they eventually went to North Africa. Eventually, short stop in Israel, and eventually the Rambam made it to Egypt. Okay, again, 1157. They just get a little more. Keep going. Okay, this is 1160. Keep going. This is, again, they keep moving down. Or is it just go back just one thing? Just one, if you could go back one. Okay, you should just know. You see, in Spain, they're becoming very big. You know, this is Castile. This is Aragon, Navarone, Portugal. I forgot what this is. Leon. Okay, so Leon and Castile, they're going to go together. And then when 1492 or 1470... with Ferdinand and Isabel, that's going to reunite all of these. But you see already, instead of becoming small little places, they're going to become bigger areas.
And the Muslims were pushed out of Spain? Well,
they're slowly losing. In the 900, they completely conquered just about all of Spain in 711. As a matter of fact, I didn't mention it before, but there was a battle at the Battle of Charles Martel, the last stand in Europe, at the Battle of Torres. The Charles Martel was the last stand. He had the last army. Behind him was nothing. And had the Muslims got through him, that's it. It would have been nothing. He was the father, I think, or the grandfather of Charlemagne. So that was the stopping point from the Muslims, and then slowly but surely they kept losing Spain. Okay, go on. Okay, when the Almohads came in the late 1100s, so they brought new, fresh. It was like the Muslims were trying to get on the regain. In other words, they were slowly losing, and then when the Almohads came, they said we're going to reconquer Spain, and they kept pushing the front forward north. Keep going. And then this was the last thing. In 1212, there was this major battle. And they made a crusade out of this. They called it a crusade. They called everybody. You could see who was the Christians had to stop the Muslims. The Muslims were making this major, major offensive. 60 to 100,000 infantry from 10,000 cavalry. This is what the Christians, they put it from Castile, Navarone, Aragon, Leon, and Portugal. All in urban militias. These were all in Spain itself. But they got Christian militias orders from Santiago, Knights Templar. Knights Templar, this is like from Jerusalem. You know, they got the names, the Templar, from the Temple Mount. The Knights also Hospitaliar. Also from Knights that had to do with the Crusades in Israel, in Israel. So they mastered this massive battle. And it was 1212 in Las Navas de Tolosa, Tolosa, or whatever, wherever it is, so you'll see it. And that was it. They beat the Muslims, and from that point on, the Muslims were never going to be a threat to the Christians. So this is the last major threat. Had the Muslims won this, then things could have been different. Things would have been a lot different. The Muslims may have stayed longer and done more, and the Jews would have had more of a, they would have had more of a more of a need for Jews, because court Jews back and forth, diplomats. But that's not what happened. They lost, and then now it was only a matter of time. Okay, let's just go on. By 1260, next line. Okay, this is what it looked like at the Battle of Las Navas del Tolosa. That was it, 1212. Keep going. And this is the same picture, a different way of looking at it. Okay, by 1265, this was all that was left of the Muslims. Okay, so as long as the Muslims were here, the Christians tolerated the Jews. They're not going to get rid of the Muslims until 1492. So the Muslims are going to hang on now for 130 years. While they're here, the Jews are around. They're still around. They're doing well. They're into the businesses, whatever that was. They're in government. And they're doing well, okay. And that's from 1265. What also happened is, I guess you could go on, okay. But now what a main difference that happened while this was happening is that when the Jews first came to Spain, they had to deal with Jews from Muslim countries, and now once they were in the Christians, so Christians saw themselves more in Europe. So now they had to see, they saw themselves more in terms of the Jews in Christian lands as opposed to Jews in Muslim lands. So they had more dealings with the Jews in Provence and South France and the rest of Europe. So now they had to deal with that, which meant, like, one of the issues that came up was with the controversy with the Rambam's Moreh Nevuchim in the 1240s. And it happened earlier and again in the 1240s. And one other thing that happened around this time, a major thing, was the disputation with the Ramban. You can go to the next one. And that's with the Ramban, the king, was it John or Charles?
James.
Who? What did it say? James. King James of Aragon, he demanded that they have a debate between the Christians and the Jews, and he felt that he had, was it Pablo Cristiani, I think it was, he felt that he could go ahead and show that the, Pablo Cristiani, he felt that he can show that the Christian is right, and he demanded that the Ramban, who was the leader of a Spanish Jewry, come and debate, and they made a debate. This was the first and probably only time that it was a fair debate, because the Ramban asked the king, he says, can I say things against Christianity? Right? That was, in all the other debates, you can't say anything negative against Christianity, you can only defend Judaism. I mean, that was every, I guess they learned from this debate, because after 3 days, they just stopped it, because they saw that Ramban was wiping the floor with Pablo Christianity. And King James was so impressed, he actually said to the Ramban, he says, I never saw somebody defend something so wrong so well. That's what he said. He gave him a nice amount of gold, and then he sent him on his way. But, so what happened is that the Ramban, that this all happened in Barcelona, and the Ramban went to the shul, he spent Shabbos there. And in the shul, I don't know if he lived there, that was his shul, but in the shul that was there, he gave over the Rashi Pratim, the back and forths. I said this, they said this, they said this, I said this. And what happened is the Christians told the king, you have to kill the Ramban. That's why I kill him, because he only had the right to talk against the Christian religion during the debate. But this was not part of the debate anymore. So the king felt bad. He didn't feel right of killing the Ramban. But he told the Ramban, that's it, you got to get out of Dodge. You got to leave town. So the Ramban left town, and where did he go? He went to Eretz Yisrael. He came to Jerusalem in 1270, I think it was. And you have to realize that was like right after like the Third Crusade. And the Crusades were just, the Christians were terrible in those days. I mean, again, the Muslims were the more moderates, and the Christians were the fanatics, and they saw Jews there. They killed out all the Jews. This goes back to the First Crusade. So when the Ramban came to Yerushalayim, he couldn't find a million of Jews in Yerushalayim. So he went to Shechem, he got a few Jews. He went to what's now the Gaza, he got a few Jews there from Hebron, and he put together a minyan. And he found an abandoned building, and that became his shul. And that's pretty much the same shul. That shul has been in existence. There's been a minyan in the old city since the Ramban, since the 1270s. That's what he, except for the 19 years that we did not have the old city. Yes?
Why did James the First, if he felt that Judaism was so wrong, why did he allow the debate in the first place?
He wanted, again, the ideal Christians are, ideally Christians want to convert Jews intellectually, show them that they're right and we're wrong. That's ideally. As a matter of fact, we mentioned, I don't know, if last week or the week before, I know we did go back a little bit in history with the popes, the original doctrines of the church, Pope Gregory, one of the originals, they said we will not, the church doctrine was not to forcibly convert Jews. I mean, that's from the church, the Pope, that, you know, what happened on the local level, you know, was not, whatever, that came out differently. But the approach of the church was to show them the truth by convincing them, not by. And I guess also in Spain, it was a different relationship between the Christians and the Jews. The Jews were in positions of power, of influence. They saw Jews differently than they did in Europe. The Jews were cultured, they were part of the society, and that could be one of the reasons that led to the major tragedy. So that's what happened, that's the ending of the Ramban. So I guess, you know, you see how Hashem runs the world. I guess he wanted, it was time for Yerushalayim to have a minyan. So he had this whole debate, and he had to get thrown out of Spain, and it took somebody of the Ramban stature to go to Yerushalayim and pull, and that's it. He got himself a shtiebel, he got himself a, and that's it, it was a minion. And since then, there's a great book out there. It's called When Heaven Meets Earth. Is it put up by Feldheim, or I don't think Artscroll. And it's just a history of Yerushalayim. An unbelievable history. It's just a very, it goes through all the generations, and sometimes the Jewish community in Yerushalayim grew, and sometimes it got less, and sometimes there were droughts, and sometimes there was, you know, sometimes there were leaders, the local Turkish leaders were very bad to the Jews, and sometimes they were not, and it goes through the history and all the great people that were there, you know, just straight through our day. Okay, let's go on. Okay. So I'm still trying to get to the 13th century, so 1300s. So I'm almost there, 1260s, 1270s, yeah?
Well, why did it say that he was a great supporter of the Jews?
Who, James?
Yeah.
Oh, if he wasn't a supporter of Jews, they wouldn't be debating them. You know, I guess they would be killing them. I guess he felt, he was convinced by Pablo Cristiani that he can convince the Jews that the Jews are wrong. So based with that, he said, sure, great. Bring down the Ramban and let's go. Let's have it out. Prove the Ramban that he's wrong.
That's not showing support for the Jews. He didn't kill him, but
he didn't kill him.
He's
but
trying to convince him to be
okay. But
really, like the Jews, he didn't believe they were right.
I mean, he didn't believe they were right, but he didn't. I'm sure he had plenty of Jews in his court. I'm sure he didn't stop the Jews. He didn't persecute the Jews. I mean, so many things that were being done to Jews, expelling them and killing them, and all these things that were going on in Europe at the time. In the rest of Europe, and here he was. The Jews were thriving, you know. This is still Jews were doing very, very good. You're probably right. It wasn't, there's a big difference where, by saying you can keep your religion and just, you know, it's everything is fine. Or you can keep your religion, you just have to explain it to me. You know, that's a little less. So you could see probably the Christians are, you know, overall the society is getting, is starting to get more tight, you know. And it's going to get rougher and rougher for the Jews as the Christians feel themselves stronger and need the Jews less. As a middle class starts to evolve in Spain, they're going to need the Jews less. Once they need the Jews less and less, so they will flex their muscles more and force to see what they can get out of the Jews as well. And that's the story of European Jewry. You know, they needed them, but the kings needed them, and therefore they protected them from the kings. You know, but the local, you know, people, their population, they saw them as competitors. The wrong religion. There was always this dichotomy with the Jews. Okay, let's just go on to the next one.
Is this the guy who started the King James version of the Bible? Is that
could be. It could be. I'm not sure.
I don't expect you to be an expert in that.
I don't think. No, I take that back. I don't think so. I think the King James that did it was from England. Does that make sense? Okay. Yeah, because this is Spain. I'm pretty sure it's not. I think it was a King James in England, and that would happen after much later. I think that was in the 50s. I don't want to say. I'm really not sure. I think it happened much later than this period.
When the masses get educated, they don't stop with the persecutions?
That's when the persecutions start.
When the masses get educated?
Because now they see the Jews as... we could do what the Jews are doing. Why are they getting the jobs? Not us. I mean, it is, I guess, the difference between being educated, meaning doing certain things, and then being like, I'd use the term very loosely, liberal. Like, that's not going to happen until the Reformation. That's not going to happen for another few hundred years. And that's only when the church's grip on Europe becomes much less. People can start to think for themselves, and they can have opinions that are against the church that they won't get burnt to the stake with. And then already, once there's, you know, the church is forced to have more tolerance, so that'll spill over to the Jews as well. Okay, I think that's the... All right, let's see what... Okay, so now we're up to the 13th century, the 1300s. Coming into the 13th century, there were about 120 Jewish communities, as many as 100,000 Jews. And if I'm not mistaken, I'm not sure if this is... I think this is one place I've seen. Another place I've seen is it was even more Jews than this. Probably maybe closer to 200,000, twice as many. By the middle of the century, like you saw before, we're down to maybe four major areas. There was Portugal, which ended up becoming its own country, Castile, and Aragon, which is going to end up becoming together. Leon was taken over by Castile. Castile was always the biggest, always had the most Jews. Then you had Aragon, and then Navarre, and how do you say it?
Navarre.
That was in the north center. It's relatively small compared to the rest. Okay. So, again, this is what the map would look like. Again, 1360. Even as late as 13... I mean, we're going to go 1360. We're going to go to 1492. The Muslims always... They were able to maintain a presence in the very, very south. Leon and Castile, they became one. Aragon became also bigger. There's Navarre. And Portugal. Okay, 1360, go on. Okay, now what happened is the Aragon, the Jews were, they became, since they were on the Mediterranean more, so they became more seafaring, and they were doing more business, and they had more of an influence on many of the other countries, even in Italy. We'll see on the map in a second. But they had more of a very influence on the Mediterranean area in terms of shipping, in terms of trading. And what that did is that created a middle class in Aragon, and they had less use for Jews, and there was more anti-Semitism. So there were much less Jews in Aragon as there was in Castile. Okay, and they were moving out. Crown of Aragon, situated on the coast of the Mediterranean. Okay, look at the next one. You'll see on a map where, what their influence was. Okay, they're also, because of that, they're going to be more influenced by the plague. That black plague, which started in Italy, is going to affect Aragon much more because they do the trading, and that's how it was spread, by rats. Originally, rats that came on board to a boat, a ship, and then it spread from there, and from there it just spread all over. So Aragon is going to be hit the worst of all of this. Here, this is Aragon, okay, in about 1400. And even as late as 1400, they had all this area, Naples, Sicily, I was right, it was Sicily, Majorca, I think that's called Majorca, all this area here had a tremendous influence on Aragon. So they had business, they were more affected from the plague, and okay, let's just go on to the next one, because, and this, here are some of the numbers, staggering. Catalonia and Valencia, especially towns, lost over 30% of their population. Even though the Jews suffered as much as anyone else, they were also accused, I guess, here as well, more in Europe. Okay. There was also, in 1556, now this is about a few years after the plague, there were riots in Castile and Aragon. Pedro of Castile, he appointed so many Jews to high positions that he was actually called, like, his court was called the Jewish court. And because of that, he was known that way. And he caused from him a rebellion, a revolt, which he put down. You can go on. A revolt broke out in 1359, but he was able to put it down. And it triggered a civil war in 1356. Even though the riots broke out, a number of Toledo nobles and as well as Jewish fighters resisted, but nevertheless a quarter of the Jewish population was murdered. And this is in Toledo in 1355 as a reaction to Pedro hiring so many Jews. So they always had this, you had to be careful. You always had to keep a low profile. It was not easy for the Jews. Go on to the next one. Okay, this afterwards there was actually a civil war in 1369 when Pedro died. Henry was the half brother of Pedro, first king, and he went on his platform was anti-Semitism, get rid of the Jews, and that's he became king. But he did what every other politician did after he became king, and he backtracked, and he put in a lot of Jews anyway. So you can go on to the next one. He used Jews anyway. Okay, this is the main thing that happened to the Jews, and this we're going to talk about now. The riots of 1391 is the beginning of the end of Spanish Jewry. This is going to be a riot. That things are going to happen for about a year or two, and by the end of these 2-3 years, there's going to be nothing. Pretty much, the Jewish community is going to be a shadow of itself. A way of looking at it would be almost like what World War I was to World War II. So 1391 is going to be to 1492. In World War I, most of the Jewish Jews were misplaced. A good amount, if not most, like a tremendous amount of Jews were displaced because of the war. The communities that were there for hundreds of years were no longer. The Jewish infrastructure wasn't there. So like the spiritual structure of the Jewish community of the Jews in Europe in World War I was like totally destroyed, and in World War II that was the physical destruction. So here too, this is going to be in 1391, it's going to be the a large physical and just a tremendous terrible thing for the Jews. It all started actually it started a little earlier than this, but there was in 1390 King John of Castile died, and he had a son who was 11 years old. Now, Jews in history always like strong leaders. We always do well with strong, stable governments. But when you have a king who's only 11 years old, and he's being so at first he was being ruled by the arch, he was being supported or tutored or whatever they called by the Archbishop of Seville, and when he died, so then there was a power vacuum. There was a vacuum. It was it was lawlessness. You didn't have a strong central government. Are you going to the next one? So there was a an archdeacon. He's a priest by the name of Ferrad Martinez of Seville, and since 1378, I mean, just for 14, 15 years, he's been preaching, kill the Jews, destroy the synagogues. For 14 years, he's been doing this. And then finally, in 1390, when the king and the archbishop died, and there was no strong power there, so that's it, he started a riot in Seville. And this riot ended up going through the entire Spain. In Seville alone, he destroyed most of the synagogues, murdering 4,000 Jews. The remaining survivors were forced to submit to baptism. Basically, he went to Jews, and he went to Jews. You're going to either convert or we kill you. And this is the first time in history that tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of Jews broke and they converted. And it was sweeping. It went from one city, and after Seville, it went to the next city, and the next city, and the next city. And you can keep going on. Martinez in Seville alone, he destroyed all 23 shuls, confined the Jews to ghettos. He stopped a contact between Christians and Jews. He felt that, it's not good for Christians to be connected with Jews. They're a bad influence. And the removal of Jews from positions of powers. That's what he did. Keep going. Then if it went to Seville, the same mobs then started in Cordova. And then it went to, help me out here, Jane, how do you say this word? I don't know.
I-N.
Huh?
I-N.
I-N? Okay, and Toledo. And then this was all in Castile. But by the next, it went to Aragon, to Valencia. Valencia is on the west side. It went to Majorca, which is one of the islands off, and to Barcelona, Girona. Barcelona is in Aragon, Girona, elsewhere in Catalonia. Went all over. And then from town to town, the mobs came, and they gave the Jews a choice. You convert or you get killed. And we're talking, keep going to the next one. What basically, I guess it's a... I guess it could be hard for us to understand, but you know, when you have a certain momentum going, and people all over, they say, "Oh my gosh, what's happening?" And they see so many.
If they saw what was happening, didn't they build up an army to protect themselves?
Because there was no central government. The king was not. The king's army was not being run anymore.
Why would they have to even talk to a king's?
I guess they could, but as many Jews as there were more non-Jews. And how much? You had mobs, riots. You know, the Jews weren't soldiers. They weren't same. I guess you could say same thing with the Holocaust. But also, what happens? I guess is certain momentum, and you see all these Jews converting. So I guess like the momentum was to convert. One thing is like the Christians. There's something in Paul and Romans, he writes that it's going to be at the world's end, everybody's going to convert to Christianity. And people were using this as, you see, the prophecy is coming true, Jews are converting. Christians saw so many biblical prophecies fulfilled, they began to believe, and it sparked them on. Christians says, look at this is it, this is the time, the Mashiach is coming, you know. And then that just sparked the mobs on from town to town to do this. It's just sparked them on. So that's one thing that helped this go further. They would go to towns, keep going on to the, they just attack. Next one. This is the first time that converts, people were converting, conversos, they were converting right and left. And if, after all said and done, it's like, why? What happened? In Europe, they were killing themselves rather than converting. And here, everything cracked. And they're trying to bring different reasons why, and they felt because they were assimilated and they were learning philosophy. And they gave, you know, maybe they're looking back at the Visigoths, and this thing will blow over. And just they weren't as rooted in Judaism as much as maybe they should have been. And all these factors led to, since their commitment wasn't so serious, when they were forced to be killed or to convert, many of them converted. Let's just go further. This is, I saw from Jane Gerber. She is a professor in the CUNY College. She wrote this book. And in her book, she writes that in 1391, she has, her numbers are about 100,000 Jews converted, 100,000 Jews murdered, and 100,000 Jews somehow survived going into hiding or fleeing. So now, after 2 years, you have a community of Jews that's one-third of themselves. One-third of what they originally were. Power, prestige is gone. And you can imagine the how low they felt. Like, they take a look and, you know, many Jews were converted. And now that they were converted, they remembered these Jews were converted. They're not letting them go back anymore. And the Jews, the Christians, were very ill-prepared for this. They didn't know what to do with these Jews. These Jews that converted, they didn't know how to deal with them. So of these 100,000 Jews, many of them said, okay, we're going to be Christians now. Many of them said, let this thing blow over. I don't know what the numbers were. I don't know if it's 50-50 or 70-30, that they were just going to go back, or just they felt forced, they didn't want to be killed, but that's it, they were stuck. And now, all of a sudden, these Jews that now were Christians that were left out of certain areas, now they could be full-fledged, you know, if there were certain doctors that they couldn't be, now they could be doctors. Certain positions in government that they could not be, now they could be positions of government. Which, what did that lead? That led now to more anti-Semitism. Because, but at the end of the day, these converts now and then again in 1492 are going to get the worst of it. Because they're going to be called new Christians as opposed to the old Christians, so they were never accepted. And then they're going to be, eventually when they come up with the Inquisition, they're going to be constantly hunted, not trusted, and just they really ended up with nothing. It's tragic. The whole thing is tragic. And this is really where it starts. It starts when the kings were able to get a hold of the country. Riots are bad for business, bad for taxes. Also, the Jews are taxed at a much higher rate. So now that we have all these Jews now turned to Christians, so the king's going to be taking a big hit on taxes, you know. It's not going to be a good year for taxes. You know, he probably wants some more as Jews as opposed to Christians. So it's I mean, all these things are going to be playing out now in 1392. Jews are going to start to leave. That's it from this point on. And you have to realize everything else that's going on this is on the heels of a black plague. This is on the heels of no less than 20 cities in Europe expelling the Jews. And now the one place, which Spain, which was the leading community of Jews, is now taking such a hit. So it comes into the 1391. This was really the very beginning. This is the beginning of the very end. It's just from here, it's all downhill. There are Jews that are going to start to... Now the move is to emigrate. The move is to leave, to get out of Spain. That's a good great question. Where do you go?
Italy.
You can't. They went to Italy. If they could make it to Poland. Some went to South France, Provence. France was already. The Jews were kicked out in 1302. In 1291, the Jews were kicked out of England. So no Jews in England. No Jews in France. So if you can make your way to Germany, but Germany was tremendously hostile that really wasn't the preferred place. If you can make your way to Germany, some made their way to North Africa, and now they're going to start to go to the Mediterranean basin. They're going to start going back to Syria. They're going to start going back to Eretz Yisrael, Sfat, Yerushalayim. Rev Avadja Mibatanura, he was the author of the Rav and the Mishnayos. He's in the 1400s, so he made his way. He was the chief rabbi of Yerushalayim. He didn't have a chief rabbi, but he was the Rav of Yerushalayim. He came from Spain. And again, the question is why? What was the reason for this? Yet in Europe, they were killing themselves, and they were not allowing themselves to be going to become Christians, and yet here in Spain, this is probably the only time in our history that Jews cracked as a mass, as a public. You know, never. You always had individuals here and there. And okay, I think that just, let me just see what the next slide is. I think this is a good place to stop. Okay, just let me see one more. Why'd they fail? Assimilation. They had a comfortable lifestyle. Some may want to blame it on that. You know, everything is good. They take is it that much different than here in America, where the assimilation, all you got to do is just blend in, and you got the good life. You know, you make a good living, a good house, a good job, good vacations. You have everything. Maybe that led to that as well. They were free to participate in society and local culture. Keep going. This is just another reason. They had like a Maimonides said when and he gave a psak for Muslim in Muslim lands, I think by Yemen, a certain place that he allowed them to take the trappings of being Muslim. So here they just made the extension to Christians, which was not a good extension at all. Just go on to the next one. Okay. So maybe we could we'll try to pick it up from here. I will see if we'll finish, go through Spanish Jewry from this on, or maybe I'm thinking of next time going to Italian Jewry, catching Italy up to the 1400s.